On the order of things here, I'd like to shift the order that's there in the bulletin. If you could take out Psalm 51, just as a little exercise. Now, all of us have ideas of what sinfulness is, and we certainly have had enough education to realize that ultimately when we talk about sin, we are talking about our relationship with one another and with God. There's no such thing as sin that only affects ourselves. Because everything we do, every behavior, positive or negative, has an effect on the world around us. And obviously has an effect on our relationship with God. In fact, sin is best described as, excuse me, somehow removing myself from right relationship with God. We don't have to get into mortal, venial, or any of that stuff. Sin is sin, and all sin is social. It has ramifications to those around us in one way or another, and to the world at large. So what I'd like is this morning, if you could just pause for a moment and get into that place where we can acknowledge that we are sinners, that we are not perfect, that sometimes we make mistakes, and that some of the mistakes we make, some of the outbursts we have, some of the negative energy that comes from us does affect the world around us, especially those who are closest to us. Be mindful that as people, we all of us need to be sensitive to who we are at all times. And from that place where perhaps I'm aware that I am always in need of God's mercy, let us together read and pray Psalm 51. Have mercy on me, O God, according to your steadfast love. According to your abundant mercy, blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin. For I know my transgressions and my sin is ever before me. Against you, you alone have I sinned and done what is evil in your sight, so that you are justified in your sentence and blameless when you pass judgment. Indeed, I was born guilty, a sinner when my mother conceived me. You desire truth in the inward being, and therefore teach me wisdom in my secret heart. Purge me with hyssop, and I shall be clean. Wash me, and I shall be purer than snow. Let me hear joy and gladness. Let the bones that you have crushed rejoice. Hide your face from my sins and blot out all my iniquities. Create a clean heart, O God, and put a new and right spirit within me. Do not cast me away from your presence, and do not take your Holy Spirit from me. Restore to me the joy of your salvation, and sustain in me a willing spirit. Then I will teach transgressors your ways, and sinners will return to you. Deliver me from bloodshed, O God of my salvation, and my tongue will sing loud your deliverance. O God, open my lips, and my mouth will declare your praise. For you have no delight in sacrifice. If I were given a burnt offering, you would not be pleased. Sacrifice acceptable to God is a troubled spirit, a broken and contrite heart, O God, you will not despise. In this translation, they eliminated one very powerful line. It's a line, we used to read this in Latin, and I can't remember it in Latin, but the translation is, I am a worm, not a man. Imagine saying that I am a worm and not a man. You can't get lower than a worm, I guess. And you hear a little bit of that Old Testament theology that in my mother conceived me in sin, that Old Testament thing. We certainly don't go that route anymore. But you get the sense that there's a heaviness around sin, and a heaviness that I think when we all find ourselves somehow looking at our lives and trying to reconcile some of the things that have happened, some of the things we have done, some of our choices, some of the people who pass in our memories that bring back heavy feelings or negative feelings, we have all been touched by the reality. And what Jesus was talking about in his life was a freedom from all of that. When he said to the sinners, you know, I came for you, I didn't come for the righteous. He was talking directly to all of us who are in churches and synagogues and temples and all the rest, that we would not become so blind to the reality that we are above all those things. And yet I think in our tradition, in the tradition in which I grew up, it was always held out as a possibility that you and I could be perfect, that we could never, ever, ever stoop to the level of being a sinner like those people. In fact, because of our denominational splits, we always held ourselves more really in keeping with God than all the rest of those. Whatever tradition you were part of, it was always those people over there who are lost. Sin has been pervasive in every culture because I believe the human spirit demands that there be a conflict. You can't have growth unless there's a conflict. There is no change unless there's something new coming on that's going to rub up against what is old. A change of life, a change of spirit, a change of heart, a change of mind always comes with a conflict that we don't call conflict, but it is a conflict. And it is out of conflict that we come to a new peace. We come to new possibilities. That's what Jesus was talking about. And that's why I want to use this reading from yesterday from Henry Nouwen that I think is just so absolutely fabulous. And it might become, I think, for me, for the rest of my life, a way to consider what I am doing. You don't need to have your book there, but I'll share with you. It starts off with, this is Isaiah, who was just regaling people for having this wonderful sense of worship. Like you go to the temple and you do all this, you know, burn the bulls and sacrifice all kinds of stuff. You do all this stuff and throw blood on the altar and put blood on yourself, etc. And you think that that's what God wants. And he says, if you offer your food to the hungry and satisfy the needs of the afflicted, then your light shall rise in the darkness and your gloom will be like noonday sun. It doesn't matter about the worship. If worship is going to be somehow meaningful, it has to be an expression of who I am every day, and it is in the everyday that it is possible. And then Henry Nouwen offers this as a reflection, and I just think this is wonderful. Hospitality is not to change people. Hospitality is to offer them space where change can take place. How many times have you and I in our churchiness decided that somebody had to begin to think like we do in order to find a home here? How many times have we perhaps seen someone walk in and made a judgment just on their presence and never gave them the opportunity to really be themselves? As a clergy person, I've done it a million times because I've been involved with millions of people. And it's human to do those kinds of things. We are called to do better. Hospitality is not to change people, but to offer them space where change can take place. It is not to bring men and women over to our side, but to offer freedom not disturbed by dividing lines. Church churches have much to learn. It is not to lead our neighbor into a corner where there are no alternatives left, but to open a wide spectrum of options for choice and commitment. When Jesus said, go out and take care of the poor and the afflicted, and we talk about the works of mercy, you know, visiting the sick and visiting the prisoners and all those kind of things. It's not to do nice things. It's not an act of kindness. It's an expression of belonging. It's a way of opening up the possibility that there are things you, my brother or sister, have yet to explore about yourself. It's got nothing to do with me. It's got everything to do with you and my job, my role as not just minister, but as a person of faith, is to give you and create that opportunity. I wonder how many times in the course of my career, especially all my many years working with, you know, teenagers, that I have made or lost the opportunity of making an opportunity for one individual to discover himself or herself, or encourage them to become who they really are, as opposed to trying to help them be like the rest of us and fit in. I had one situation, and I'll share this with you because it always haunts me. The young man who was, he was, I think, a junior in high school. And I had a youth group, a good-sized youth group, and we were going on a trip. We were taking a bus ride to go someplace, I don't remember where. And by the time we got there, you know, they brought their soda or whatever on the bus. And by the time we got there, he was drunk because his Coke was not Coke. It was something else. And so it was a real disruption for what we had asked and what we had as a rule, you know, for the group. And so I had to, you know, chide him and deal with it when we got back home. We were too far away. I think we were up in Springfield. Too far to turn around and go back or send him home, so we kept him. When we got home, I called his parents and told them that it was not behavior that we could allow, and, you know, he was not going to be allowed to be a part of the group because it had a number of other things that happened before that. Well, as it turned out, he didn't come to youth group anymore. And about maybe 6 months after he left, they found him beaten to death in one of the parks in Waterbury. And he had been, doing something with drugs and ended up being beaten to death, found under a bush. And that always bothered me, especially when I got to the wake. And when I got to the wake, I walked into the room and his aunt, who was a member of our church, stood up and screamed at me and said, "It's all your fault. If you had just paid attention to him and gave him a little bit of care, he wouldn't be dead." And I was as dumbfounded as I still am. It was a horrible situation, but it sticks with me because I learned from that you never know what is going on in another person's life. Especially when I was working with teenagers, you never know where they are coming from, what is happening in their inner thoughts, what struggles they have, what doubts they have, what they're suffering with at home, their school, all the pressures of adolescence. I mean, it's a horrible time of life. You remember adolescence? It's gotten 10 times worse now, or more. It's even worse now. The pressures are incredible. And if you don't have somebody there to help you, just to provide an atmosphere where you can become you, you either become like everybody else and get along to get along, or you just become dropout. And that's our loss. I don't know about you, but I know in my life I certainly have much to hold myself accountable for on that level. Do. How about your youth groups here, the years of kids, etc.? It is not to lead our neighbor into a corner where there are no alternatives, but to open a wide spectrum of options for choice and commitment. It is not an educated intimidation with good books, good stories, and good works. But hospitality is the liberation of fearful hearts so that words can find roots and bear ample fruit. Has anybody ever referred you to a book when you have a problem? you know, I just read this great book. Why don't you read this book? Or why don't you go talk to so-and-so or whatever? What we need probably is a space to grow my own words, to find my own self in my own way with your support, to begin to become positive. Hospitality is not a method of making our God and our way into a criteria for happiness, but is the opening of an opportunity to others to find their God and their own way. This is radical stuff. By radical, I don't mean crazy. I mean really deep down rooted stuff. This is really the bottom of what Christianity stands for. It is not about, it never should have become what it has become, that somehow my God is better than your God, or my God is more right than your God, or my way is the best way, or my way is the only way. To allow people to find God in their own space. One of the things I've tried to do in all of my ministries for a long time, as best I can, given the parameters which I've lived, is to allow people to have their own faith. My faith has changed so many times in my life. I've gone from a self-righteous, blocked, I don't know, Calvinistic person, I guess more than that, Council of Trent blocked person, blocked. And I've gone through a lot of transformation and realize even now, I don't know. When all is said and done, I don't know who God is. And who am I to say who God has to be for you, even if you're a child? To give you a little bit of support to explore that possibility yourself. To start off with love and look at love and all the ways that love can be expressed and say every time you love, if it's mom and dad kissing you, if it's your puppy, whatever it is, that's a moment with God. And if that becomes the foundation, you gradually move to another place where you, a child, any person is going to need something more personal than a puppy. We're going to develop an idea and a need for something bigger and greater, and you have support that. And God knows where it'll take people. It took some people into Hinduism, and they found God. It took some people away from Christianity into something totally different. And who am I or anybody else to say that's wrong? God is bigger than all the definitions that we put all together in a mixer and blend them up. It's bigger than all of that. Hospitality is opening opportunities for people to find God in their own way. The paradox of hospitality is that it wants to create emptiness. Not a fearful emptiness, but a friendly emptiness where strangers can enter and discover themselves as created free. Free to sing their own songs, speak their own languages, dance their own dances, free also to leave and follow their own vocations. Isn't that what we want for our children? All those freedoms that allow them to have a life and now go off and be you as you're going to be happy to do it the way you need to do it. The challenges in this, I think, are so great, but are so, I think, very, very, very critical for where we are in the world today. I think this is a model or a challenge just in the word hospitality. If we had hospitality in this church, as this hospitality is, I wonder who would darken the doorways and who would be here and where would we be going? You certainly wouldn't be listening to me every Sunday. You'd be listening to each other. You'd be talking about what happened and how God touched my life today or how I'm not feeling God today. It would be an evocation to prayer and to support one another where you leave to go to when we leave here. This can be a bubble. This should be our doorway to life. God's not found only here, if God is found here at all. God is found everywhere. We need to learn the language. So I offer you this, if you haven't taken a copy of the book, take it, it's on page 4 and 5. It's the reading for yesterday, Saturday. It's a wonderful, wonderful meditation, And I do believe that he captures in that the essence of what community is, whether we're talking about Bethlehem community or this church community. It captures the essence of all church communities. And I do believe, if I dare say this, in our Judeo-Christian roots in America, captures the heart and soul of American democracy. It's not just freedom to say what you want. It's hospitality. It's not just do it our way. It's hospitality. We care about each other enough to be together and find a way to live. Amen.